And a personal note, it's always a pleasure to come back to Chicago. I'm a Chicagoan. My Shirzi Hatzadik of Bracha, Rabbi Gessel Kagan, was a landmark in the city for many, many years. So although it's many years that he's no longer here, and many years since I have been coming as an Eidim, it's still a pleasure to come and see the tremendous growth and development in the city. Much has been written and much has been said about the Kaisel Maravi. Svarim have been written. And we can only scratch the surface and touch on some of the issues in Halach and Machshava. And the Gemara Brachas brings the psukim in the tefillah that Shlomo HaMelech composed, that he said upon the Chanukah Sabayas of the Beis HaMikdash. And in that tefillah, Shlomo HaMelech points out that the Beis HaMikdash would be a focal point for tefillah, for eternity. There are people that will daven toward Eretz Yisrael. There'll be those who daven towards Yerushalayim. There'll be those who daven towards the Beis HaMikdash. There'll be others who daven towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And the Gemara says that if a person is in Chutz Laretz, he davens toward Eretz Yisrael. If he's in Eretz Yisrael, he davens toward Yerushalayim. If he's in Yerushalayim, toward the Beis HaMikdash. If he's in the Beis HaMikdash, he davens towards the Makom HaKadosh HaKadosh. The Braisa seems to be speaking even to Zman HaZeh. Interestingly, the Vabasra, Dav Chavches, learning Dav Yoyim, it's not that long ago, there seems to be a Machlokes toward which direction we're meant to daven. One Mandomer says, Shechina B'chol Makom, makes no difference. Another Mandomer says, Shechina B'mayrut, wherever you are, you're daven towards the west. Tosfos there, but the Basra says that if we don't paskin like those on the right of the Basra, we paskin like the Braisa in Rachas, that not only in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, but even this Zman HaZeh, we still daven towards the Beis HaMikdash, not the Halacha Psuka. And the reason seems to be, as the Medrash says, there's a handout floating around, you may have it in front of you. The Medrash says that even after the Churban, the Shechina did not depart from the site of the Heichal. As it says in the Pasuk, Hashem says that my eyes and my heart will be there in the Makom HaMikdash forever. And Rav Acha says, La'olam ein Shechina zaz de mikayis l'maravi. The Shechina never departed from the kayis l'maravi, as Rav mentioned. As it says, Hinei za'ayim ed acha akas leinu. Which means that the Churban didn't change anything. Just like when the Beis HaMikdash stood, this was the Makom HaShechina, and therefore this was the focal point of tefillah. We paskin that even after the Churban, since the Shechina remains there, it's the focal point of tefillah. It's not just that the Kaisel Maravi wasn't destroyed. The Medrash says that it couldn't be destroyed. Medrash Rabba in Eicha, and the Pasuk Hayut Zoreha L'Roish, brings an expanded version of the famous Agadah of Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai, and Aspasionus, which is mentioned in the Gemara in Gittin, that's been involved. And it says there that Adonijonus had four generals, four dukes. One of them was the Duchas of Aravia, of Arabia. His name was Fangar. And Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai confronted him and said that you're a neighbor. The Arabs are neighbors of Eretz Yisrael. Why is it that you are so critical? Why do you attack us? So this Fangar was a very clever person. He said, we're doing you a favor. He says, you know, all the kingdoms, all the kings are opposed to the Beis HaMikdash. This is why you have so many tzaras. We'll destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and that'll be the end of your problems. No one will attack you. So Yechon and Zakkai said, Halev yodea im la'ekel im la'kalkalais. That only the heart knows whether what you're saying is true or whether it's just trying to pull the wool over my eyes. It says that when Aspasionus decided to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, actually Titus, So he delegated the job to these four duchsim. And Fangar, the duchas of Arabi, was given the western wall. And the other three were successful. They were able to destroy their walls. He couldn't destroy his wall. So he was confronted by the authorities. Why didn't you do your job? So he said, oh, I could have destroyed it. The reason I didn't destroy it was that people should see the greatness of the Roman Empire. That's such a fortified, strong building. And he was able to destroy it, but if there'd be no remnant, no one would ever know. So Aspasiana said to him, well, you said good. Good, well taken point. Says, but anybody who disagrees with the king is liable for a penalty, so I'll tell you what. You're going to be thrown off a roof. If you live, you'll live. If you die, you'll die. And this will be the test, trial by ordeal. He was thrown off the roof and he was killed. And the measure says this was because of the klala of Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai. But the point was that it could not be destroyed. Why, says the Medrash? Because it's the Makom HaShchina. And therefore it had a permanence, it had a kiyum, it could not be destroyed. Now interestingly, although it could not be destroyed, apparently for many, many centuries it was buried. And we have written accounts of great famous Jewish travelers. One of them was Rabbi Binyamin of Tudela. Wrote a famous sefer, Masas Binyamin, in the late 1860s, early 1170s. And there he reports that when people came to Yerushalayim, they would daven by the south side of the Harabayas, by the north side of the Harabayas. There's no reference to tefillas at the west side. Now, also as well, 150 years later, there was another famous Jewish traveler, Rabbi Shori Aparti, you know, the famous Sefer Kafka Beferach, which is actually cited by Paisim as a mucker for halachas. Now, I don't own the Sefer, but according to the quotations that I've seen quoted, he as well does not mention that the Kaisal HaMaravi was a mucker tefillah. He says that when people used to come to Yerushalayim, they davened other sides of the Harabayas. And according to Yechiel Nichol Tukachinsky, I'll just mention Agat, this Yechiel Nichol Tukachinsky was one of the great Gedolei Yerushalayim. He lived from 1875 to 1955. And he's best known for a sefer on Hilchas Aveilus, Gesher Achayim. But he wrote a three-volume sefer on Yerushalayim called Ir HaKadosh VaHamikdash. And in that sefer, there is cites that the first historical report of people davening at the Kaisel is from the Rabbi Bar Knur, the Rav, who came to Yerushalayim in 1488, and he reports having davened by the Kaisel Marov. So what happened? What happened? So it seems there's a legend which that sefer quotes from the Maram Chagiz, who lived in Yerushalayim from 1700 to 1710, that for many hundreds of years, the Kaisel was buried. And the legend goes like this, that in the 1520s, when Yerushalayim came under the control of the Ottoman Empire, one of the Islamic dynasties, and Suleiman the Magnificent, who was the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire, so he decided that he was going to build a palace for himself in Yerushalayim in a place that was not far from where the Kaisel Maravi is. And he built this beautiful palace, and one day he's looking out the window and he sees an old woman dumping trash right near his palace. And he can't believe it. Chutzpah, someone should dump trash in front of the Sultan's palace. So he had the woman brought to him and said, what are you doing? So he says, there's an ancient tradition from the time of the Romans. Now keep in mind, if this is taking place in the 1520s, we're talking about almost 1500 years after the Khurban. There's an old tradition that anybody that lives in Yerushalayim has to bring their trash to this site once a day. If you live outside of Yerushalayim, you have to bring your trash twice a week. If you live 3 days' journey from Yerushalayim, you have to bring your trash once every 30 days. And this was instituted by the Romans. Why? Because since they were unable to destroy the Kaisel Maravi, they at least wanted to bury it. And therefore it seems that for many centuries, the Kaisel was buried, and it couldn't be seen according to this legend. So what did Suleiman decide to do? He decided that something had to be done about this. So he passed a law, first of all, that anybody that dumps at the site of the Kaisel will be hanged. And many people were hanged and put to death. And then he announced, whoever loves the king will assist in clearing the waste. And he himself participated. He put on work clothes, and he began to clear away the rubble from the Kaisel Maravi. He scattered money in the piles as an incentive for people to clean up the site. Ultimately, according to the legend, 10,000 people joined the effort, and in 30 days, the Kaisel was revealed. Now, Rabbi Chiel Michal, in his Sefer, questions the historical accuracy of this story. Because Suleiman, as we said, only came to power in the 1520s, and Ravadi Bar Nura, over 30 years before that, reports that he himself davened at the Kaisel Maravi. So there's a historical question as to the accuracy of this legend, but it seems that for much time, the Kaisel was concealed. Certainly, in subsequent periods, much of the Kaisel, if it wasn't buried under trash, it was concealed by buildings. There was an entire neighborhood, the Mugrabim, that was built along the Kaisel Maravi. The area that could be accessed was very, very, very small. Very, very narrow and not deep at all. In fact, interestingly, the area in front of the Kaisel where people could daven was only about 3.5 meters wide. And this is up until 1967. In 1967, when the Kaisel, the old city, was taken in the Six-Day War, it was decided to raise the entire neighborhood, and it was cleared away in one day, creating the modern plaza in front of the Kaisel today, in anticipation of the people that would want to come. And today, it's estimated that 7 million people a year visit the Kaisel. I don't know if that means 7 million different people. Maybe a lot of those people are coming day after day after day, but I'll upon it. It's a Kel Kalpiyos, it's a site that attracts everyone. Now this idea that the Shekhinah is present by the Kaisel Maravi has consequences lahalach. Let me explain. There's a general shaila in several places in the Gemara where the Kedusha Mishayna Kitchel L'Shaita or where the Kedusha Mishayna Kitchel L'Atid Lava. The original Kedusha, is it only temporary, the Shaita, or does it sanctify the place for eternity? Now this Shaila is brought regarding Kedusha Seretz Yisrael and the Chiyuv of Mitzvah Sekluyas Baretz, and it's also brought regarding the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. Interestingly, the Rambam in his Psak makes a Chiluk. And the Rambam says like this, regarding the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, he says that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael lapsed. When the Yidden were exiled to Babel, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael lapsed. Interestingly, it was restored when the Olei Babel came back, and it did not lapse in the subsequent Golos. And the Rambam is nidchak to explain what's the difference, why did the first Golos cause the Kedusha to lapse, not the second Golos. And the Rambam says a tremendous chiddush. He says that the first Kedusha was a function of kibush, of conquest. And of course, conquest lapses when someone else conquers. So the second Kedusha was a consequence of chazaka, of a kinyan, and the kinyan doesn't lapse. And therefore he says that, at least in the areas that were reconquered by the Olei Babel, the chiyuv of Trumas U'Maisos is daraisa. But interestingly, the Rambam says that this distinction is only regarding the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Regarding the Kedusha of the Makam HaMikdash, there the Kedusha never lapsed, even with the Chorban of the first Beis HaMikdash. Regarding Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash, we pass in Kitchel Asid Lava. Says the Rambam, why? Because the Kedusha of the Mikdash is because of the Shekhinah, with Shekhinah Lai Batla. And the Shekhinah never is Batla. Now the consequence of this, Gemara says in Svachim and Megillah, is if you hold Kedusha Rishayna Kitcha Lasik Lava regarding the Makam HaMikdash, Makriven Afal Pishayin Bayis. You can still bring Korbanos in the Makam HaMikdash even after the Korban. It's very interesting, the Rabbi Yaakov Emden in the Shevas Yaivetz wants to say a Chidush that in fact, after the Korban Bayisheni, for a short time, at least the Korban Pesach was brought. Tremendous Chidush. Because there's the Mishnah Pesachim, which makes mention of the fact that when Leo gave instructions of how his carbon pesach was to be roasted, and the question is, which of the Leo is this referred to? Does it refer to Leo HaZakein, who lived during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, or is it referred to Leo Yavna, who was after the Korban? And the Yaakov Emden wants to say a chiddush that refers to Leo Yavna, who was after the Korban, and yet carbon pesach was brought. And therefore, he contends this chiddush that, in fact, since Makriv and Akrishen Bayis, there was a time, at least, that Karban Pesach was brought after the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. Now, it happens to be that it could not have been for a long time, because the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70. In the year 135, the revolt of Bar Kokhba, the revolt against the Romans, was suppressed, was crushed. And from that time on, for several centuries, Yidden were not allowed to enter the city of Yerushalayim. So there was only this window of opportunity, and for many hundred years after that, it wasn't possible to come in. And by that time, the ability to bring korbanos, for various reasons, had lapsed. But at least in theory, there is this possibility of makriv and afal pishayin bayis. In the middle 1800s, when there was an increase in settlement activity, so the possibilities of the halacha were again discussed. So there was a Talmud Chacham, his name was Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer. He was a Talmud of Rebbe Kiveger and the Baal Nesidus. And he wrote a sefer called Drishas Tzion, where he explored, among other things, the possibilities of bringing Karbonos Bisman Hazeh. Now he tried to exert influence through certain very, very renowned Jews, Sir Moshe Montefiore, and to Baron Edmund Rothschild, to perhaps raise the possibility with the Ottoman Empire that at least Karban Pesach could be brought. So this sparked a halakhic discussion in many Svarim. The most famous treatment of it is in the Tshuvas Binyan Siyan from Yaakov Ettinger, about Tuna, but others. The Beger himself wrote a Tshuva that's published in the Drishas Siyan. Rav David Harliner, Shemos David, wrote a kuntras in the subject, and they raised several objections to the possibility of bringing Karbonos Bizman Hazeh. Let's mention some of them. Number one, this assumption that we pass in Kitcha La'asid Lava, even though that's the sheet of the Rambam, but the Ravid there, in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Paragraph is Masik, the Ravid argues. And for many Achroinim say that in this Machlaikas, in the Rambam and the Ravid, there's no Hachro. There's no shock. You can't say with a certainty we pass in one way or the other. Others say there's the problem of tumma. How are we to overcome the problem of tumma? We can't go into the mikdash for tumma. We can't do the avoid of the tumma. Okay, that would could be dealt with at least with regards to karbonas tzibur, because tumma hutchim at tzibur. There's an interesting problem which has consequences nowadays. So the Rambam paskins, like the Imam Da'amar, that even the begadim of the Kayin Hedget had chelas. And there's a machlokes in the Gemara whether the avnei, whether the belt of the Kayin Hedget was pure linen, or whether it had kilayim. And the Rambam paskins, like the Imam Da'amar, that it had kilayim. And one of the ingredients was chelas. There's a big shayla in Achrayim, whether the tchelas of the Bidei Kuhuna also requires the chibazim, like the tchelas of tzitzis. So many of the Achrayim raise this possibility that there's no way to perform the avoida, because the avoida has to be done by the kohanim wearing Bidei Kuhuna. The Avnei have to have tchelas. We don't have tchelas, or do we have tchelas? Of course, that's a modern shaila, which really should be dealt with perhaps on the next legal holiday, the issue of chelas. This was one of the issues that was raised. Another issue was raised about the yichus of kehan. But relevant to our discussion today, there was another issue that was raised, and the makom of the mizbeach. Even though Makbirin Akbishayin Bayis, you have to build a mizbeach and the makom of the mizbeach. And the Rambam writes, notice by Sebchira, the makom ha-mizbeach mechuvin b'yoysen. That it's very, very precise where the mizbeach was. And you can't bring a carbon in any other spot. No, so where was the mizbeach? So, we have a mesechta, Mesechus Midas, which gives us precise measurements of the base of Mikdash. And if we have a landmark, we could measure off, and we could calculate where the mizbeach should be. But there are several problems. Number one, the Midas that are given in amos. So what is the size of an amos? This is Vega races. Vega in the Tshuva, published in Vishasian, says that we don't have a viewer as to the exact length of an amos. We don't even nowadays. This is a child in Paiskin. So how can we calculate where the mizbeach should be if we don't know what the amma is? Number two, that even if we could use the measurements for the Mishnah, you have to have a landmark from which to measure from. So what do we know? What can we assume with a certainty is where it's meant to be? And this relates to a very, very famous shaila, which is dealt with. We know where the Kaisa Maravi is. But what is the Kaisa Maravi? Because we know that the Beis HaMikdash had several zones. There was the Har HaBayis, which was 500 Amas by 500 Amas. And then there was the Azara, the inner courtyard, which was 135 by 187 Amas. The Kaisa Maravi, is this the western wall of the Har HaBayis? Or is this the western wall of the Azara? And since we don't know what it is, we'll see that there's a lot of discussion on this point, but the objection was raised that we can't calculate where the mizbeach should be because we don't know where we're measuring from. So another proposal was raised. See, it's a very interesting thing. You know, we think of the Har HaBayis, we think of it as a solid rack. But the truth is, the Mishnah says in the Sefer Parah that the entire Har HaBayis was hollow. It was built on top of arches. If they kever at the hut, in case that someone was buried deep under the ground of the Har HaBayis, a person walking over would become tameh. To avoid that problem, they hollowed out the entire site and they built the floor of the Har HaBayis, the platform of the Har HaBayis, and arches. But we know there's one place where the original bedrock has to rise to the surface, which is the makom ha-mizbeach. But the pasuk says mizbeach adama she'atum ba'adama, that the mizbeach had to be on solid ground. So therefore, even if the entire Har HaBayis is hallowed, there's one place that has to be solid ground. So someone suggested very, very simple, right? Let's do a survey of the Har HaBayis, and we'll see where it's hallowed or where it's solid, and then we can ascertain where the mizbeach is. And in fact, there is one such site. As you know, on the Har HaBayis, there is what's called the Kippas HaSela, the Dome of the Rock. This was built by the Caliph Omar in the 600s, and that rack was holy for the Muslims as well. They believe this is, in their religion also, it has some significance. And he built a dome over it. So this rack is part of the original bedrock, so perhaps it's the Makom HaMizbeach. But, interestingly, there's another place where the bedrock also rises to the surface. Chazal tell us that in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where the Aron was placed, there was the Evan Shesia. The Evan Shesia, Chazal says, called that because Menu Hushtas HaOlam, it was from there that the world was founded. This was the starting point of Bria. So there really are two places on the Har HaBayis where the bedrock rises to the surface. The Makom HaOron and the Makom HaMizbeach. And it's a very serious shaila. Which is the rack that's under the dome? Now, there are different opinions. But these two racks are 80 amos apart. The Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Mizbeach are 80 amos apart. So we can't ascertain whether that rack is the Makom HaMizbeach, because if it's the Makom HaMizbeach, yes. If it's the Makom HaOron, then the Mizbeach is 80 amos further to the east. So it's a very, very serious question. And this is why, practically, there is no movement to be korbanos b'zman hazeh. Too many obstacles to be overcome. But let's put aside the question of korbanos. Some of the questions we touched on have immediate relevance to us. Let's talk about this original question we raised. What is the kaisel? Is it the kaisel of Azara or is it the kaisel of the Harabayas? Now we know that in the Midbar, the Machna was divided into three areas. There was the Machna Yisrael, from which the Mitzara was sent. There was the Machna Leviya, from which the Zov was sent. And there's the Machna Shina, from which even the Tamanes was sent, and for which the person goes into the Tumah, there's a Chi of Karas. Now, when we talk about these terms, a Zov and a Tamanes, these are loosely defined. Zov doesn't only mean a Zov. A Zov means anybody whose Tumah is Yotzei Megufo. Anybody whose Tumah is the consequence of a bodily emission. Therefore, it includes the Balkari, it includes a Nida. And Tamei Meis is normally Tamei Meis. Tamei Meis means anybody who's Tamei, even Tumah Samada, even Tumah that comes through touching something. So, this is how it was in the Midbar. When the Beis Hamikdash was built, there also were three zones. The entire city of Yerushalayim was considered Machne Yisrael. The Mitzvah was sent out of the city. The entire Harabayas was Machne Leviyah. A person who is the Zav, the Balkari, can't go into the Harabayas. The inner Azara is Machna Shechina. As we said, at least according to the Rambam, these Isurim apply to the Zman Hazeh. Even though the Raivet, as we said, argues, but here, even if there is no Hakra, even if we can't determine whether we should follow the Rambam or follow the Raivet, here it's a Chumra. And if it's a Chumra, we certainly should be Machna like the Rambam, that it's also. So the question is, can you go to the Kaisel? Now, if the Kaisel is the wall of the Harabayas, so a person going to the Kaisel is standing outside of the Harabayas, and therefore even if he has a Tumah Yotzei Megufo, there's no problem, because he's standing outside of the Harabayas. But on the other hand, if the Kaisel is the Kaisel of the Azara, then a person who goes to the Kaisel is standing in the Harabayas, and therefore, if he has a Tumah Yotzei Megufo, he would not be allowed to go. Now, this was an old machlokes. There are two tshuvas from the Radvaz, who was a contemporary of the Beis Yosef. He actually, the Seif Yomuk, was on the Beis Din of the Beis Yosef in Tzfas. There are two tshuvas from the Radvaz, where the Radvaz seems to assume that the Kaisel was the Kaisel of Hazar. Which means that any person who has Tumah Yotzei Megufo would not be allowed to go to the Kaisel by going to the Mikvah first. Now that's not an unsolvable problem. A person could go to the Mikvah. But it's important to know that a person would have to be machmir in all the chumras that apply to Tfilas Nida B'Zman Hazeh. Now it's very interesting. There was even men who go to the Mikvah, to the Yoyts of the Tekanas Ezra, there are many, many kulas, many leniencies regarding chatzitza, other kulas. We know when a woman goes to the mikveh, there are many, many chumras, because the chiyuv tefillah is daraisa. But if the halacha would be that the kaisel is the kaisel of Azar, and therefore a person would have to have tefillah before going there, here we're dealing with a chashish daraisa. Therefore, all the chumras that apply to tefillah nashim would apply to that tefillah. Very important. No, you can't just go to the mikveh and think you're covered. In other words, it would have all the chumras that apply to that tefillah daraisa. So which is it? So it happens to be that later paiskim, all, I can't say all, but virtually all, seem to dispute the Radvaz and come out that the kaisel really is the kaisel of the Harabayas. This is the psak of the Pasa Shulchan, who was the Talmud of the Gra. This is the psak of the Avnei Mezer in a tshuva. And Rabbi Chiya Michal Tupachinsky in that sefer of Yer HaKadosh V'Migdash brings eight proofs that the Kaisel is the Kaisel of Azara. Let's mention one of them. I think I mentioned two of them. Says, we know from the Mishnayos and the Sefsinidas that the wall of the Azara was 135 amas long from north to south. The western wall, 155 amas long. The wall of the Har HaBayis was 500 amas. Now, for many centuries, very little of the Kaisel was revealed. So it was very hard to know how long is the Kaisel. The part that was exposed was very, very narrow. So it could have been assumed that perhaps it's the Kaisel of the Azara, and maybe it is only 135 amas long. Now we know, through the fact that it's exposed, and through archaeology, we know that the Kaisel is very, very, very long. Much, much longer than 135 amas. Actually, it's longer than 500 amas, which is a mystery. And there are answers given to that question. But it's very, very long, and therefore it can't be that it's the Kaisel of the Azara, it must be the Kaisel of the Har HaBayis. But there's another proof I'll just mention, which is interesting. As we said, the rack under the dome of the rack, what is it? Let's assume for a moment that it's the Eved Shasiyah. And Bechiel Nichol brings a number of proofs to that proposition, even though some disagree with that. But let's assume it was the Eved Shasiyah. Well, how close was the Eved Shasiyah to the back wall of the Azara? You make a cheshbon, it was approximately 28 amas, not longer than that. And therefore, if the kaisel was the kaisel of the Azara, and the rack under the dome is the Eved Shasiyah, it would have to be much closer. The distance is too vast. And therefore, that's another proof that the kaisel must be the kaisel of Azara. The chen amad debar, and that certainly is the minig. The minig certainly is to permit going to the kaisel without going to the mikvah first. We assume that it's the kaisel of the Har HaBayis, and therefore a person standing at the kaisel is standing outside of the Machna Leviyah and can go. But I will mention one interesting point, that what about going onto the Har HaBayis? Going onto the Har HaBayis certainly is entering the Machna Leviyah. And therefore, a person with Tuma Yos and Migufo can't go. So if a person goes to the mikveh, and goes to the mikveh properly, can a person go onto the Har HaBayis? Not so simple. Because on the Har HaBayis, there are zones, there are areas, which are also part of the Machana Shina. And we can't exactly ascertain where these zones are. And the reason is this. Because the Har HaBayis was 500 by 500 amas. The Azara was 135 by 187 amas. But we don't know exactly where within the Har HaBayis was the Azara located. And therefore, if a person goes to the Har HaBayis and simply walks around, he may be walking into an area which is part of the Machna Shina. The Machna Shina, a person can't go if he's a Tamei Meis. The assumption is that we're all Tamei Meisim, and we don't have the Paras Numa with which we've metallic ourselves. And therefore, in 1967, when the old city was taken back, there were proclamations that were issued by Gedali Yisrael, very emphatically forbidding going out to the Har HaBayis because of these Shashais. And Kimeduma, this is the meaning of Yirei Shamayim, not to go on to the Har HaBayis. But there's another interesting shayla. What about putting your fingers, for example, into the crevices of the kaisel? Let's say a person, kind of practice, put a kvittel in the kaisel. So many people go, and they will stick their fingers into the kaisel. Now, if you stick your fingers into the kaisel, perhaps you are sticking your finger into the Machna Leviyah. Now the Gemara says, regarding the Azara, the Gemara says, via the mitzvah shmei via. So here, perhaps the same thing. Putting your fingers in the crevice of the kaisel could be awesome. There's a long shul, it's not an Azar in this. Not an Azar gives four hekelim to this. Number one, he argues, it's possible that the makom hachayma was not in Miskadosh. It's not part of the Machna Leviyah. The Kedusha of Machna Leviyah is only beyond the Chayim. That means even though the Gemara says explicitly that the Mokam HaChayim of the Azara was in Miskadosh, except for the thickness of the Shayin Knar, But it could be that the Makam HaChaim of the Harabayis wasn't this Kaddish. Number two, he says it's possible that we don't say Mitzvah Shnei Bia over here by the Isser of going into the Machna Leviyah, only by the Isser of going into the Machna Shina. And he gives other Hetei. But it's mentioned in Svarim that since the Yezer is a Tshuva, that there are many people that are Machmir, connected out in Nezer, and they will not put their fingers in the Kaisel, and there are many people that will not touch the Kaisel for the same reason as a Harchaka, to avoid the possibility of inserting their fingers. I heard, though I didn't see this in a saber, that some people also won't touch the Kaisel, because they're worried that the stones may have eroded somewhat. If you touch the Kaisel, you're also, it's like you're inserting your fingers in a place where the Kaisel once was. And it's just like, as it says, that people that take that opinion should not be dismissed. It's an old minig, it has makairas, and therefore, ain masichin also. You don't criticize such a person for being arrogant. I'd like to touch on some elements of the machshava about the kaisel. I'll mention two points. As we all know, the first Ramah in Arachayim says that Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samen, seeing oneself in the presence of the Shekhinah, is a cloud gadol of being a tzaddik. Now, I often joke that if you ask a person, how many pages will you have to turn in the Shulchan Aruch until you find a halacha that you don't keep? I'll joke with a boy in yeshiva. So, you claim to keep the Shulchan Aruch. How far will we have to go till we find something that you don't live up to? So the average bucket says, well, 5 pages, 10 pages, I mean, the first few pages I keep. Well, I'll point out that probably the first halacha you don't keep, the first halacha in Shulchan Aruch is Yizgaber Ka'ari. Lama Babaka Labai Dizbaro. You should get up in the morning like a lion, surfing bunch of life. I don't know how many of us get up like lions. Okay, but the first Ramah, we almost certainly don't keep. Shavisa Hashem Lenegi Sam, imagining oneself to be in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, this is a Klal Gadol, Gemilas HaTzadik, and the Ramah says if a person sees himself in the divine presence, he'd be filled with Yirah Shamayim, he'd be filled with humility, filled with pachad, and his whole life would be different. Someone once showed me that when the automobile was first invented, there was a Rav that was sent to Shiloh, can a Yid drive an automobile? You know, we assume it's the propulsion, the person's allowed to drive. But when cars are first invented, they have to take it. So a certain Rav was sent to Shiloh, so he wrote a whole tshuva. He said, a sakana, is it not a sakana? So mutter, is it also? In the end of the tshuva, he writes, okay, long was talking that it's mutter to drive. But why would a person want to drive? He says, if a person drives, he has to keep his eye on the road. He'll be mavato the shivisi Hashem l'negi samin. You can't imagine the shina in front of you, you have to keep your eyes on the road. So there were people that lived this way. He says, certainly in the Makom HaMikdash, when you go to the Kaisel, and we understand that just a few amas beyond is the Kaidash HaKadoshim, certainly the feeling that we have to have, we should have, is a feeling of tremendous humility, tremendous pachat, tremendous yira. Now, the Yemei Chaim of Vishnitz, you may know that a lot of his Torahs were based on the Matrius and Rashi Tevis. He said that Kaisel is Rashi Tevis v'nafshi ke'ofar l'akoyl tiyeh. Even if letters is called Kaisel. A person goes to the Kaisel, is she filled with a sense of, he's standing before the Shechina, Shavisa Shemeneki Summit, before the Ribbono Shel Olam. Is she filled with a sense of his own insignificance, his own humility? And, you know, we have to wonder what has happened to the Kaisel. You know, it's become a place of celebration. When you go to the Kaisel, very often you see military ceremonies, you see Chassan, Chassanim, and Kalas coming to take wedding pictures. You know, as if this is a beautiful background. In America, they put up beautiful draperies, and there, what's better than the Kaisel? It has to be a place where we feel a sense of our own modesty and a sense of loss, of avails. You know, in 67, when the Kaisel was taken back, so people celebrated. We have the Kaisel. But we can't be misafik b'mu'ah. That's to fill us with a desire. Shibana beis hamikdash, Mashiach should come, Mashiach beis hamikdash, v'sham na'avad chabiyur, as always was. I want to share with you a maimer from the Ramchal. On the side, a short maimer, the side of the Kaisel Maravi. The first one or two Agdamas. We know that there is a bone in the human body, because I'll call it the Luz. And it is from this bone that the Tchias Mason will come. On the sheet, number four, the Medrash, Adrianus Shachek Hatzomus, Adrianus Kesar, his bone should be ground up, asked the Shumach Hananiah, Mehechan Adarizberkul Mainzitz Adulas of Love. The Tchias Mason will come. Where will a person be recreated from? So it says, from the Luz Shol Shedme. It's one of the bones of the spine called the Luz. So, Adrianus asked, how do you know? So he said, bring it to me, and I'll show you. So they brought him one of these bones. They ground it in the mill. It wasn't ground. They tried to burn it. Nasta b'mayim, they put it in water, but like nimcha, it didn't dissolve. Nasta l'avasav, they put it on an anvil. The hischomagel of the package, they began banging on it with a hammer. Nechlak asav, the anvil broke in two. The nitka package, and the hammer broke. Lo chasak lo, nothing was missing from the loose. It was indestructible. And the Mekubalim tell us, that in addition to this luz, the bone itself, there's an element of chiyus. There's a life force in the bones, which is also necessary to the tchias ha'meisim. The Mekubalim call this the havla of the garment, the spirit, the moisture, if you will, of the bones. Now, I have a quote over here. The Ramchal also talks about this in the Das Tfunas, but I quoted here from Rav Moshe Zakos, who was one of the great Italian Mekubalim before the time of the Ramchal. And I'll read you his words. Havla de garni hi osa habchina shaluchnias. This is an aspect of spirituality. Hanisharas al asmoisa, which remains on the bones. Kdei shi'ilo ezechius. There should be some life force left in the bones. Kdei shi'yuchlu liskayim atzman atchia. That the bone could be sustained for the tchias amazing. Ki mohaya nishadam shu lachluchis. If there was no moisture, so to speak, lo yiyu kam b'tchias ha'meisim. These bones could not rise in b'tchias ha'meisim. I'll just mention, if you look in the Malbim, and the Nevuah of the Atzamas Yevashis in Yechezkel, he understands what was miraculous about that b'tchias ha'meisim, that the Atzamas were Yevashis. They didn't even have the Havla of the Garmi. They didn't even have the Kus of the Chiyusa. It's interesting. But in the normal seder of things, you have to have that havel of the garment, a little bit of lachluchis, a little bit of spirit left in the bones. It's not enough to have the material of the bone. You have to have the life force of the bone in order for it to rise in tchias ha'meisim. So listen to what the Ramchal writes. I'll read these words on sheet number six. Inyan kaisel maravi. This is the whole maimer. The whole maimer is three lines long. But Adam nishar etzem echad dekever hanikra luz. In a person, in a human being, there's a bone that's left, which is called luz. V'olav yibana haguf l'tchias ha'meisim. From that, the body will be rebuilt by l'tchias ha'meisim. V'yesham gam chelek min ha'nefesh. There's also a part of the nefesh, which is the life force. V'hi nikra havla l'garmi. That's called havla l'garmi. And those two together, the luz with the half of the garment, allow for the tchias ha'meisim. Says ken hu b'veis ha'migdash. So it is with the beis ha'migdash. Nishar ha'kaisel ha'maravi. The kaisel ha'maravi is the luz. It's the bone. Agav is a gevaldi remez to this. It says in the pasuk that Yaakov Avinu called the makom ha'migdash beis kel b'ulam luz shemir b'rishayim. The original name was Luz. It's a remnant to the fact that there's a Luz there. V'hu sayz zeh Luz, sh'olav yivon ha'binim wasid lava. Just like the body by the tchia emerges from the Luz, the Beis Hamikdash will emerge from the Kaif HaMarav. Va'aysa ha-kedusha ha-shayra Allah. And that kedusha that remains there, as we said, is manazeh, because the Shechina la'izasa, nikra ha'av with the garment. That is the ha'av with the garment. That is the ruchnis, which is still there. And from the kaisa, and the Shechina which is there, from that the Beis Hamikdash will emerge in the Hegev Yomei. Now, this month of Tammuz is really the beginning of the period of Avelos, for the Churban Beis Hamikdash. Just want to share with you a thought, not related to the Kaisel, but about Chodesh Tammuz. And perhaps this will give us some idea of what we should be thinking about during this time. The Sefer Chassidus, the Kabbalah, tell us that every month has a unique arrangement of the Shem Havaya associated with it. If Chodesh Nisan, for example, is Yudkei Vavkei Keseida, it emerges from the pasuk from the Rashi Tevis of Yismuchu LaHashamayim V'Sogya Haaretz. We know that the Shem Yudkei Vavkei implies Rachman, implies Chesed, and of course Nisan is the tremendous month of Chesed, the outpouring of Chesed that comes from the Ketav Mitzrayim. We responded with Chesed. Zachartu l'Chesed Nurayach, Havas Kulosoyach, and followed me Bona Shalom. He's in the month of Chesed. The Tzirut of Tammuz is Kei Vav Kei Yud. It's the Shem Havayi in reverse. So it's a very simple conjecture. If Yud Kei Vav Kei is the Shem that implies Chesed and Rachem, what is the opposite? What is the opposite of Yudkei Vavkei in reverse? This is the month of Din. It's the month of Puronius, the month of Churbis. Interestingly, Chodesh Av, we know, has a dual aspect. The first half of the month is the month of Churbis. But we know starting Tu B'Av, it changes. Now, some people have the minig to refer to Av as Menachem Av. But the minig of the Chassam Sofer was only in the last half of the month. The first half of the month is Av. Av is Kasha Yasser Ishes Benov Hashem Alekechem Yasrecha. And the Baruch Hu is like a father who has to punish his child. Kasha Yasser Ishes Benov, that's Chodesh Av. After the father gives the child a patch, then he's Menachem, he comforts him, he consoles him, he tells him how much he loves him. That starts from Tu B'Av. From that point, it's Menachem month. The Tziruth for Chodesh Av, interestingly, is K Vav Yud K. In other words, the first two letters is the second half of the Shem Havaya backwards. Then the two letters of the Shem Havaya forwards. K Vav Yud K. Because the first half of the month is the time of Purimius. The second half of the month is already the time of Nechama, Shabbos Nachum, Tu B'Av. But Tammuz is a very harsh month. We know, as we said, that these tziruchim emerge from Pesukim. The pasuk for Chodesh Tammuz is a pasuk of Megillas Esther. It says that Haman, after he was on cloud nine, he was invited to the Mishnah by Esther, and he on his way home, and Mordechai doesn't stand up for him, so he comes home, and he gathers his friends and his wife, and he tells them about how fabulously wealthy he is and how powerful he is. And then he says, V'chol zeh einenu shovali. But all this is worth nothing to me. Whenever I see Mordechai. So the words, zeh einenu shovali, are the Seife Havis of Kevav Kei. Zeh einenu shoveh li. That's the Remes for Chodesh Tammuz. Now it's brought in Svarim that it's very telling that here it comes from Sofei Tevis and not Roshei Tevis. The reason is very, very simple. Roshei Tevis implies Chesed and Rachamim. Sofei Tevis implies Din. Why is that? So think about it for a second. Chesed is a Kodesh Baruch Hu's Mashpia, Kodesh Baruch Hu provides, Kodesh Baruch Hu gives. First letters of a word flow into the later letters of the word. Sofei Teivis, in the word. That's what Puranus, that's what Din is. Din is when the Kadosh Baruch Hu holds back. When the Kadosh Baruch Hu holds back the Shefa of Bracha. Therefore, Sofei Teivis implies Din, it implies Puranus. So you have Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei in reverse, it emerges from the Sofei Teivis of a Pasuk. This is the harsh Midas Adin. It's a harsh month. It's a month of tremendous Puranus, tremendous calamity for Klal Yisrael. But I want to point out, this Pasuk, Zeh Inenu Shel Beli, has a lesson for us as to what our Avoda has to be. If I was to ask you a question, okay, we're going through this period, in weeks now, we should have a time, we're going through 3 weeks, time of Avelis. What are we meant to learn from that? And what is the lesson that's Yotzei from these weeks, this time? So let me ask you a simpler question. Where would we expect to find the answer? If we were looking somewhere for a revelation as to what we're meant to learn, what we're meant to understand, where would we find it? So I would like to suggest that let's look at the Haftarah for Tisha B'Av. Why do I think it's a logical place? Think about it for a second. Whereas the Haftarahs were selected because they come to teach us something. So this is the Haftarah of Tisha B'Av. There are so many shlokim and yirmim that talk about churban and golus, and if this is the parak that they pick, this must be the parak that contains the lesson we need to learn. And if we look at that haftarah, which is a terribly graphic description of churban and suffering, this is how the haftarah ends. Kayamar Hashem, al yisale al chacham du chachmasa. Let a wise person not praise himself for his wisdom. And let a strong person not praise himself for his strength. Let a rich person not praise himself for his wealth. If a person wants to be proud, let him be proud of this alone. The extent to which he understands and knows to be Ribono Shel Olam. Ki ani Hashem oseh chesed mishpod utzaka v'aretz ki bo'ei lo chafatzim v'm Hashem. So this Klal Yisrael faces many, many problems. So everyone has an idea. Everyone has an idea. Some people say that with tact, with diplomacy, if we are smart, we can solve the problems. But history tells us, the long history of Klal Yisrael tells us, that we try that, and it doesn't work. The wise person shouldn't think he's so smart. Very smart people have tried to navigate the problems of Klal Yisrael, and weren't successful. And then other people say, the key is economic investment. If we invest, if we subsidize, if we grant our enemies millions and billions of dollars, then they'll like us. And all we have to do is utilize our wealth. We've tried that. That doesn't work. And then some people say it's military strength. That all we have to do is flatten them, bound them to the Stone Age, and that'll solve the problem. And says the Pasuk, there's only one answer. There's one Eitzah. The Eitzah is Haskel V'Yadaya Eisi, that we turn to the Ribono Shel Olam. And that is what the Pasuk tells us. It says, Haman was fabulously wealthy. He was powerful. He had a big and influential family. And one day, he had an awakening. And he said, V'chol zeh inenu shel beli. My wealth, my power, my influence, all worth nothing. Zeh inenu shel beli. That is the limud for Chayvish Tammuz. So we have to understand that. We have to understand that our Yeshua, our salvation, will only be through the Ribono Shel Olam. That's it. Says so there's nothing else we can do. If the Ribono Shel Olam is with us, then Be'ezras Hashem, and we understand that, then Be'ezras Hashem will be Zoicha to see the Binyan HaBayis in the Heder of Yomeinu, the Tchia of the Mokom HaMikdash, from that luz in the Havel of the garment, from the Kaisim HaRavi and the Shechina, which was never Zoz from that place, we'll see the Dinyan HaBayis in the Heder of Yomeinu, V'sham Na'avadcha B'ira, and there will serve with the Rivonish Leila B'ira, K'mei Olam V'chasham HaKadmoni Yais. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening.